This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
Garland gets it back to the top of the point for Hughes. Heavy drive, he scores! Quinn Hughes beats Dostal from the line with Pettersson screening in front. And the Canucks go up 3-1. Besser feeds the line for Hronek. Right side Hughes spinning. Back to Besser one time. Drive, he scores! Brock Besser for the top of the point beats Lucas Dostal. JT Miller might have tipped this at the side of the net. And it's 4-1 Canucks.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Driving into the Anaheim zone. Forced wide by Dumoulin. Bluger hits the trailer. Sherwood in the slot of the shot. It's blocked. Gets his own rebound in front for Heinen, who scores! Kiefer Sherwood didn't give up on the play, and Danton Heinen tucks it home from off the left wing. It's 5-1 Canucks.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks 5, Ducks 1. Complete game for the Vancouver Canucks on the road, taking their second straight victory. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. And as always, get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650. We are going to welcome in Randeep Janda into the conversation coming up in just a moment. A 5-1 Canucks victory. And we spoke after the Sharks game, the first game of this road trip on the weekend, about, hey, you know what, hey, give them credit, they won the game. But it wasn't a game that I thought was true to their identity. And one of the things that they had struggled with was giving up rush chances, and they gave up quite a few rush chances against the San Jose Sharks. Now, hey, I'm not sitting here and saying best game of the season. It's the Anaheim Ducks. We know they're not a great hockey team, right?
I think you can call this the best game of the season.
But I think from a process standpoint, very few mistakes. Only gave up, I think, a couple rush chances all game, and both those we can talk about. There weren't really bad breakdowns. One, Soucy falls over, leads to a chance. And the other one, Hronek is kind of caught up, pinching up a little bit along the blue in the neutral zone. And outside of that, the Canucks didn't give up anything off the rush. They were good defensively. This was a game that was very true to their identity, and I think that's a positive.
Yeah, and again, it's fully part of strength of competition. Right?
100%. 100%.
Anaheim is... They look worse than San Jose.
For sure. But what we said last game was you want to get the win, but process matters.
Yes.
It's about you getting closer to your style of play. And tonight, to me, was a marked improvement of what they had against the Sharks.
But when you're against these teams, put them to the sword,
yeah.
Right? And, you know, 3-2 against San Jose, you get away with it. And you score late, obviously. But, okay, you get the win. This looks significantly better. And it wasn't, you know, flying high tempo. We just beat them with the chances and, you know, Lankinen bailed us out on our end. It was solid. And
yeah.
There were elements where they probably could have created more. It's 5 goals. We're not going to sit here and say that they didn't score. But, you know, at least this way, you can see what they're trying to work on in the defensive zone. And the rush chances, as you mentioned, far more limited. It was far more like what we expect to see from the Vancouver Canucks.
Absolutely. Let's welcome in Randeep Janda into the conversation, calling the game alongside Brendan Batchelor. A 5-1 road win for the Vancouver Canucks, who have now won 5 games on the road so far. Road warriors to begin this season. And Randeep, how, as far as a process standpoint and the Canucks getting closer to their identity as a team, did you feel like this was as close as we've seen so far this year?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, I agree with that statement. When you look at the quality of competition, I'm sure we're going to focus on that. But guys, process-wise, to me, that was the most complete game of the year from this team. And it really, you know, the first period, of course, a couple of power plays, Kiefer Sherwood gets that goal in transition. That's great. But the way that they kind of ratcheted up the puck pressure in the second period, the way they started that second period, end up getting that goal, which has now been credited to Elias Pettersson rather than Quinn Hughes. Even before that, the way that they were stacking shifts, guys, didn't give much of anything to Anaheim 5-on-5. And I thought this was probably the most complete game from this team, and a great one that you can head into LA to say, all right, the degree of difficulty goes up, but you just put together probably your best game from a process perspective.
Yeah, it's more of a statement of maybe the games they've put on film before this one. But as far as complete efforts, look, they come back and eventually take a lead in the first period. So they reclaim that despite giving up the Zellweger goal, the only Ducks goal. But then the final 40, you know, I'm hard-pressed to think of, you know, quality Ducks chances when the game state was in a spot where it could still be debated who would win.
Oh, for sure. And the way that they kind of locked it down, I thought it was more of just skating forward to defend, right? And we started to see that in the second period as not only JT Miller line, the Elias Pettersson line that combined to end up scoring that goal, whereas JT line goes out there, kind of leans on Anaheim's entire forward line and their back end, and then Connor Garland, Elias Pettersson, Pugh Suter go out there and end up getting that goal. But even after that, guys, there was a work ethic, there was a level of want in skating that followed that was exactly kind of reminded me of last year's Vancouver Canucks, the way that they're working hard. So I think in terms of, you know, thinking about, okay, are you playing a defensively structured game? Are you playing a game that you're happy with? I think this team can walk away from that effort tonight in Anaheim to say, all right, that's Canucks hockey. That's something that we can do. And guys, a couple of those goals too, right? The Kiefer Sherwood goal off the rush, that was dynamic play. That was hard work. That was winning wall battles. You know, and to end up setting up a player with a heck of a shot there by Kiefer Sherwood a little bit later on, that was, you know, similar from Teddy Bluger for the final goal of the game for the Canucks, of just, you know, attacking off the rush but being smart, not making unnecessary risks and waiting for support. So I thought, you know, the second half of this game, the first half was good too, and the, you know, the power plays in the period one, it felt kind of like, okay, we haven't really seen this team play a solid 5-on-5 period yet. But once that second period started, it was game on for this team.
Yeah, and even in the first, you know, they get on the power play and they score, right? And I think that kind of creates the feeling that the Canucks weren't great in the first period. And they had two chances in the first, Anaheim did. One was Soucy falls over in the neutral zone, yep, creates an odd man chance. And the other chance they had was the Zegras shot after a turnover by Brännström along the wall. And that's pretty much all they had as far as scoring chances in the first period outside of the goal. And then the only chance I can think of any consequence afterwards was that Gauthier shot off the post off the rush in the second, and that's it. So again, it's Anaheim. The competition is what it is. Nobody's sitting here and saying the Canucks are back and they figured it out and this team is, you know, is going to be hard to beat from this point on. But this was as clean a game as we've seen from them defensively, and I can't really think of any real trouble spots they had. And this is what you want to see, them growing with this, because the game coming up on Thursday against the Kings, like, the Kings have been playing fairly decent hockey. Like, you need to be growing into that game.
For sure you do. And I think, you know, even hearing what the players had to say after their four-game win streak of, yeah, we won, but we weren't playing our best hockey, where you can look at this game to say, hey, we won. We won 5-1. That was probably the most complete game. So there's, heading into that game against LA on Thursday, there's going to be a need to bring your A game. The last time Vancouver played a quality team, it was against New Jersey, and you didn't have that effort. You didn't have that focus to detail. And they got found out pretty early in that game. Against LA in the next one, you can feel a lot more confident and say, if we stick to our structure and if you play like that, you're going to be in a much more competitive game. And even beyond that, guys, the Oilers are coming to Vancouver on Saturday night. That's going to be a team that's going to be hungry. We know what the rivalry between both of those teams is like. So I think that concern about, okay, the degree of difficulty, the quality of competition, well, that's changing as of Thursday night. There's a couple of really good teams that Vancouver is going to have to face in short order.
Quinn Hughes, 300 assists. What a game. 300 assists, and yeah, well, what a fantastic game. You know, Sat turned to me at one point in the second period. He said, who's been the best player tonight? I said, Quinn Hughes. It's Quinn Hughes. What are we talking about?
It's like, Quinn!
Yeah.
I mean, this one was not too close to call.
No, Sherwood actually had a pretty good game. Well, we'll get to him in a bit, but 300 assists, and I know the graphic went out, and a lot of people were texting in about it, and you know, we've seen the stats before, Randy, of, you know, akin to Orr and Leach, and now he beats Paul Coffey to the first to 300 assists. It's just, I don't even know if it's just mind-boggling because he's that good, but it's also just mind-boggling that it's in Vancouver that the Canucks have a D-man like this.
For sure, and it's one thing to see those stats because we've been seeing them for the last couple of years, right? The fastest to this or the fastest to that. Guys, today, even watching those individual plays, I know we're spoiled when it comes to Quinn Hughes because we've been able to see him grow as a defenseman, grow into a Norris winner. But even tonight, there must have been five or six instances where you're just saying, I can't believe he did that. I can't believe he even, you know, Brock Besser a couple of times on the power play bobbled the puck on his own entry, and the safety valve that is Quinn Hughes just says no problem and takes that half a second, beats a penalty killer and all the time in the world to set up a play. On a couple of those goals, also with the Jake DeBrusk goal late, like, just being able to bring in two Anaheim Ducks players and give Brock Besser a little bit more room to get that shot off at the point. Just subtle plays that on top of the dynamic skill that he has. And, you know, there was another play, I believe it was in the second period, where he was going from left to right, and then he cuts towards the middle, and he just misses a net. That would have been an unbelievable goal. There's play after play after play that reminds us how special he is. And you talk about the 300 assists in 376 games. Orrin Leach are the only ones that have done quicker. I got news for Alex Edler, too. Your record is going to go out the window real quick here as Quinn Hughes is approaching 310 assists, which is the franchise lead for assists from a defenseman. So every single time we see him, guys, it's, you know, I know there's going to be games occasionally when there's an off night and maybe he doesn't look as dynamic as we've seen him, but that's normal. This is a guy that is so head and shoulders, in my opinion, above, you know, his peers in the way that he can control the pace of a game. Just special to watch every single night, and I thought tonight was really, really special.
Just really quickly, we got this 6-game homestand coming up here, and you mentioned 10 away. Like, it's not unfathomable that he breaks that franchise record before November 19th.
All right, if I were to say a game I'm looking at right now, I think the Rangers on November 19th. So buy your tickets. I'm calling it right
now. There you go.
I like it. I like it. Yeah, Quinn Hughes, 5-on-5 when he was on the ice, controlled 82% of the shot share.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's pretty insane. That's...
And tonight, total possession time, 2 minutes and 40 seconds on his stick. And we were talking about how many chances he created, right, Randy? But like, it's 3 assists, but he easily could have had 4 or 5.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, there were 2 shots against 5-on-5 when he was on the ice. 2 against 5-on-5. And that tells you how dominant he was and how much he was tilting the ice in the Canucks' favor tonight. And, you know, let's stick on the defense for a second. I thought that pair with Hronek and Hughes, and the only moment I did not like for Hronek was that Gauthier chance we talked about, kind of got caught in neutral zone. But that's pretty much it. You're kind of nitpicking his game if you're looking at anything to say he wasn't good tonight. But I thought Brännström, I thought he needed a bit of a bounce back. I did not love his game against San Jose. Obviously, nobody played well against the Devils, but he seemed to be more in control. We mentioned that one chance he gave up in the first along the wall, but he sets up Sherwood. He made a couple good zone exits. I thought he had a pretty strong bounce back game tonight.
Yeah, he did, and I think that play on the Sherwood goal just shows you how, you know, aggressive and how gifted offensively he can be, right? He identifies that there's 2 players down low from Anaheim, and this is a chance where he can activate. A great play by Danton Heinen along the boards to extend that play, move it up to Kiefer Sherwood. But Brännström getting up there, you know, showing his speed, showing his playmaking, and eventually just puts it on a tee for Kiefer Sherwood. I love that offensive play. But, you know, other than that one play that you mentioned, Sat, on the Cutter Gauthier, and there was another one, I believe he was hit by Strome along the boards that led to a little bit of possession for Anaheim. You didn't really notice him for the wrong reasons, and, you know, +2 on the night, playing 16 minutes after he was pretty low in ice time in the last game against San Jose. This is a step in the right direction, and also his partner, right? 16 and a half minutes for Vinny Desharnais. When you're winning, you can spread out that ice time a little bit more, but I thought that was a game where you can build confidence for that pairing. Now, you know, when we start looking at the other pairing of Tyler Myers and Carson Soucy, I thought, you know, they're end off the night in the plus, but Carson Soucy had a wild ride. Like, that was a high event game for him, especially in the first period. A couple of penalties, a couple of unlucky plays where a puck goes off a skate, turns into an opportunity. But hey, no harm, no foul, considering you don't necessarily give anything up that night. But there's still some ways to go when it comes to the rest of the defensive pairings. Obviously, Hughes and Hronek are leading the way, but a step in the right direction, no doubt, for Brännström and Vinny Desharnais.
And really, if you knock off a couple of names here, you could say it was their best performance of the season as well, on top of the team's best performance. And of course, they go hand in hand. But, you know, for Desharnais, certainly you could probably make that case for Heinen. You could probably make that case for Jake DeBrusk. There's a handful of guys you could say tonight was their best game.
For sure, and I thought that Danton Heinen line overall, just the way that they were able to push the pace when they saw the opportunity, even in that last goal that Heinen ends up scoring with a little tap-in, like Teddy Bluger, yet again, waiting for his teammates, making a strong play, and Kiefer Sherwood is being very, very assertive. We know he can be that on the forecheck. We know that he can be a pest. He can be in your face. Just ask Trevor Zegras at the end of the first period, or Sherwood is, you know, in his grill and kind of bothering him a little bit. But what I love about his play right now is that when he gets an opportunity to be aggressive and assertive offensively, he's taken it every single time. The goal was one thing, but the pass to Danton Heinen on the 5-1 goal, I thought a couple of those guys, and you know, Sherwood's had other games where 10-plus hits. Today was a little bit of everything. You saw the hits, you saw the goals, you saw some playmaking. And with Heinen, I just thought that line had a really, really strong game. The way that they were able to play off the rush especially. Remember, that's something that this team needs to improve on going back to last year, and that line had a strong night.
Yeah, absolutely, it did. And this text here from Erica and Burnaby, Hughes was amazing, but can we talk about how Petey looked today, how good he looked today? Scored a goal, had a number of scoring chances. I think this was one of his best games of the season. That is Erica texting in and others texting in about Pedersen as well. And, you know, we'll see if that goal stands. At first, it was Quinn Hughes' goal off the point shot. It let Pedersen with a screen, but it has been changed and given to Pedersen. Based on the replays we've seen, it's hard to spot exactly where he tips it. I mean, he's right there on the play screening it. So we'll see if it changes again. But what did you think of the way Pedersen played and him getting credited with that goal in net front?
Yeah, I don't know if he gets that goal or not, but I thought he deserved a goal tonight just based on the way that he was, A, finding himself in dangerous areas. He had 5 shots on goal, guys. And what I like about his game right now is that if you're lacking confidence, maybe you're not fully there, which he's not fully there. I think we can all see that when Elias Pettersson is fully confident, he's, you know, going top corner. There's no hesitation. Of course, there's still some hesitation in his game, but I love the fact that he is on the edge of the blue paint. He is fighting. He is looking for rebounds. He's doing everything he possibly can to make sure that he's in a dangerous area and he's trying to set up his teammates. So, you know, whether he gets that goal or not, I thought this was a strong game from him. He was engaged in those battles. He was, you know, a player that was playing strong defensively, and maybe they didn't have the production that they had the other night against San Jose. That's all right. Sometimes other lines step up too. I thought that was a continuation. And remember, you know, in the beginning of that second period, JT Miller's line starts off that kind of the stacking of shifts, but mm-hmm. Pedersen's line has that cutthroat mentality along with Quinn Hughes on the ice, and that really set up the rest of the game for Vancouver. So I thought Pedersen was strong. I don't know if he gets that goal, guys, but I thought this was the fact that he's led the Vancouver Canucks forwards anyways in 5 shots on goal, and if I'm not mistaken, I think Sprong had about 5 there as well, so they're probably tied. That's a great sign, because the more he's shooting, the more he's feeling confident, which is, if it doesn't pay dividends in this game, I think it's, you can carry it over to the next one.
Well, it's 8 shot attempts, too. And how many times have we had the opportunity to say that about Elias Pettersson so far this year? Sometimes we're just scraping to see, you know, 2 or 3. But 8 shot attempts. And again, you mentioned it's, as we've said so many times, if you're playing through something, you have to find a different way to try to be effective. And if it's net front right now for Elias Pettersson, then do that. Be the net front guy for here in the short term. And again, the puck's going to find its way there, and he gets a couple of chances here with 8 shot attempts. Only Quinn Hughes having more, as Quinn Hughes traditionally likes to get about 8 to 10. He gets 10 tonight. But, yeah, certainly the best night for him. Really quickly, Atu Ratu, again, it's a short night, 9 minutes and 59 seconds. But you look at the box score, he kind of took the mantle from Kiefer Sherwood as far as hits go. 5 hits for Atu Ratu, no shot attempts, but 78% in the draw as well on 9 faceoffs.
Yeah, Rick Tocchet is going to love that 78% because he's always looking for faceoff winners. And against this Anaheim team, let's be fair, they're the worst faceoff team in the NHL. So good for Atu Ratu that was able to dominate. I was kind of worrying for Ratu early on in this game after that early penalty call that led to the goal by Zellweger. But I thought he rebounded. I thought he played a physical brand of hockey. He was playing well along the boards. And if you can show that along with some of those other things, right? The faceoffs are one thing. Don't put your team in trouble. I thought Ratu responded after that early penalty. It's not something that you're going to be looking at that 9:59 and saying, wow, he had a sparkling game. I don't think it was that strong of a game, but I think this team is looking for a center right now with Pugh Suter moving up the lineup, at least for now. Are you in a position to play that fourth line role and potentially show a little bit more? I think Ratu is going to get a strong look here for the next few games. Let's see what happens, of course, with Dakota Joshua and all that. But I thought Ratu, this was a good reintroduction. The real challenge comes against LA. That's a tougher lineup to play against, a lot deeper down the middle. How do you fare against that team and some of the veterans they have?
Yeah, absolutely. And before we let you go, the Canucks had 5 power plays, scored 1. So what did you think of the man advantage tonight?
I think overall, you know, this is a team that needed a little bit more dynamic play and a little bit more fluid. And against San Jose, we saw that passing. We saw a couple of looks that Brock Besser had. But I thought, you know, Quinn Hughes, excellent setup. I love the patience of him moving to the middle of the ice. And they don't go there right away. You kind of pull the string, so to speak, of you're watching where Killorn's going, you know, and mm-hmm. Hughes is able to find that lane where he's just angling himself perfectly. I believe he passed to Miller prior to that, just to get a little bit, you know, maybe more to the left-hand side, just to pull Anaheim away. And I thought that play was, all right, it's not a set play, but you're taking what the PK is giving you. You're kind of pulling him apart, but at the same time, you're in a position to, you know, use your smarts, use the special skill that Quinn Hughes has. And that shot was clearly going wide. That was one that was set up to deflect home by Brock Besser. On that play, on that that power play, much better than the first one, a lot more direct. And that's going to happen against teams that are not good in the faceoff circle. Early on in this game, Anaheim was not good in the first faceoff circle. They picked it up later on. But if you get possession right off the bat, I think this team can make it, you know, very difficult on the opposition. But it was a little bit more fluid and not mechanical as we've seen, and that's what they have to do game in, game out. It's good to get that one goal. It's good to get that confidence. Now, against a team like LA, can you do the same thing? Can you get those zone entries? There's certain moments, guys, I think on those zone entries, I'm still seeing players kind of working, you know, as individuals. You're not seeing a real connected kind of entry. Either it's Connor Garland, you know, dumping, chasing by himself, and a couple of guys are maybe standing around the blue line. There's still some issues I have with those zone entries, but I think getting that big goal for this team will certainly help them confidence-wise.
Yeah, a bit of a mixed bag on the man advantage, but they got the goal and some more work to do here. Randeep, great stuff calling the game alongside Brendan Batchelor. We look forward to chatting with you on Thursday when the Canucks wrap up this 3-game California road trip in LA against the Kings.
All right, gentlemen, have a good one. It's a late game on Thursday as well. The half hour makes a huge difference, boys.
It does. That means we go to midnight and got to get an extra nap in. Extra long nap in on Thursday afternoon. Thanks, Randy.
All right, chat on Thursday, guys.
You got it. That is Randeep Janda. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. Now, we are going to provide more analysis on all the goals the Canucks played, the players and how they perform. Plus, we'll hear from the head coach, Rick Tocchet, and Canucks players, plus IMAC as the show goes on here. A lot to get to. But before we take a call and hit the break, what is happening on the text inbox? The fans happy with this performance here tonight?
Oh,
Dick?
Yeah. And it's all Hughes and Pettersson appreciation coming to the inbox here. 650, 650, this one. Hughes, completely different level this year. There's Hughes, then it's Makar and Morrissey getting a mention as well. And just a quick mention on Makar. After tonight, he's got 359 assists in 328 games, so he's well on track to 268 assists in 328 games, which is 359 points, but he's well on track to kind of meet Hughes as well on that marker and that conversation with those guys that we're talking about with Orr and Leach, so he had another big night himself. 650. This one, Jay, every time Hughes hits a historic milestone, I thank Mark Bergevin, John Chayka, and Ken Holland, all drafting in front of them back when they selected Quinn Hughes. Kirk and Quillam, another building block, great effort. Jake is starting to fire. DeBrusk getting his second goal in as many games. Jake DeBrusk in November.
Yeah, goals in back-to-back games. Jake DeBrusk, I'll just leave it at that. Yeah. He comes through in November. This text message here says from Augusto in Burnaby, Petey deserves the participation goal tonight. He worked hard and actually played tonight. Well deserved. That's Augusto in Burnaby on Elias Pettersson. Let's take a phone call here before we hit the break, and let's go to Lethbridge, where we have our friend Miles on the line. Miles, good to hearing from you, man. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, boys. I thought the boys had a great game tonight. You guys hit the nail on the head with a lot of points. That third line still buzzing. Loved Ratu's game in the dot. You know, he was, like you guys said, 78% aggressive. Lots of positives for the night. Miller and Besser played well. DeBrusk, I mean, I really have no complaints. I'm just curious what your boys' thoughts are. Quinn Hughes, he's playing unbelievable. I'm honestly terrified for his next contract, though.
Yeah,
if you guys could say what your predictions are for that. I mean, I'm guessing 14 mil. That's just my prediction. Anyways, boys, thanks.
Hey, you got it, Miles. Thanks for the phone call. So Hughes isn't up for a contract for two more years beyond this?
2027.
So 2027, the cap next year could be, 95 million maybe next year? What is it? Or
92.5
million next year. Maybe slightly higher depending on what they work out.
Revenues
or whatever.
Revenues and everything.
Now, after next year, though, with a new CBA, it could be a significant jump up, right? So by the time he becomes a free agent after that, I mean, the cap could be upwards of 100 million. If the cap is upwards of 100 million and he puts together the seasons he's putting together here, is 14 million ridiculous? It really depends on what market resetting contracts we see up until then. But I think at this stage, it's safe to assume it's 12 million plus. Like, I very much doubt you're going to get Quinn Hughes signed to a contract long term that's under 12 million per season.
Especially if he has these, you know, massive productive seasons, right?
Yeah. When also when you have the Norris.
Yeah.
And his next contract's all UFA years too. Like, you're talking like Pettersson, at least there was one RFA year, which kind of brings it down slightly, ever so slightly. But the argument Quinn is going to have with the hardware and then the point production.
Because, you know, there have been sizable D-man contracts, but, you know, relative to Forrest, they haven't really escalated to the scale that Forrest have seen. And then, you know, unless you were Erik Karlsson or Drew Doughty, and we're talking about Norris's, and we're talking, you know, considered the best in the games and all that sort of stuff, you know, the D-man market was almost some value at the high end. And then the Rasmus Dahlin one came in, which is $11 million. And look, he's a fantastic player. It's fun watching him. But that's the one to me that is the signal that, all right, there's going to be a watershed moment here of some of these guys are just going to get massive, massive deals. And yeah, it's fair to wonder what that's going to look like. And I think Makar ends up in the same, his UFA, I don't have Colorado's cap perfectly memorized, but I believe he is a free agent the same year as Quinn Hughes. And so if they expire at the same time, what those two contracts look like, they're going to be monsters.
And they're like, hey, you go first. No, you go first. You go first. Because the other guy's going to, you know, demand as much, if not more, than the other guy, right?
It's
like, that's
how
it's going to be.
Huge game of chicken.
Yeah.
And which one blinks first? And I imagine, you know, whoever does, the other guy goes $100,000 more.
Yeah. I mean, you know, to answer Miles's question, let's give a number.
I'll say 13.5.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, I think that might be short.
I'll say 13.25.
Yeah.
But we'll see how it goes. But yeah, you know, we'll see where that's at
I'd have to look at it. I'm not sure there's going to be a lot of market resetting contracts between now and then.
Yeah.
Because Roman Josi, now he's a bit older, but he signed nine.
But yeah, a bit older, too, a bit million. Different. Like, you know, you're getting these guys much younger than those guys are at. And you have to look at Adam Fox to see when he is going to be a free agent as well. He's the other
I think he's
watch.
Well after.
He's after because he's got an eight-year deal.
He signed a huge deal, right?
Yeah. All right. We'll get to more of your reaction on the other side on the text inbox, 650-650, courtesy of Dunbar Lumber. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, after a 5-1 Canucks win over the Anaheim Ducks, winning back-to-back games on the road. We'll get to the thoughts of the head coach, our analysis of the goals, plus a lot more as the Canucks Central postgame show rolls on, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on the People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Connor Garland picks it up and he'll drive back in on the right wing. Garland into the Anaheim end, near circle, centers in front. Pettersson threw it to the goal. Great save by Dostal off the left pad. Garland gets it back to the top of the point for Hughes. Heavy drive, he scores! Quinn Hughes beats Dostal from the line with Pettersson screening in front. And the Canucks go up 3-1.
And the Canucks just bullying the Ducks at the beginning of the second period. It starts with the JT Miller line leaning on Anaheim, being aggressive on the forecheck, and then the continuation with the Elias Pettersson line. A great pass by Garland to Pettersson in the middle of the ice. Can't score there as Dostal makes the save, but the puck goes back to the point.
Moving to the middle of the ice, Quinn Hughes with a clapper that beats Lucas Dostal, and an excellent screen by Elias Pettersson to make it 3-1 Vancouver.
He may have done more than just screening Dostal. He has been credited with that goal from Quinn Hughes, and the Canucks go on to win 5-1 over the Anaheim Ducks. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And we'll break down the goals, all five goals the Canucks scored and the goal that was scored against them coming up in a little bit here, but we'll see if this changes, because that goal hasn't been credited to Elias Pettersson. On the replay, like we mentioned earlier, I have a hard time seeing the tip, but the NHL has more angles. I'm sure if they've changed it, they must have some angle.
And they changed it late. Usually if there's a double flip, it's a quick change, and they're like, you know what, we've reviewed it again, and let's change it back. I would hope it's settled.
Right. But, so, it's a very pivotal goal, because it can tell two very different stories. Because one is, obviously, Pettersson scores. He gets the goal. Yes. Fantastic. And, you know, a second goal of the year for him. And hopefully that gets him going. And however you want to, you know, have the discussion around Pettersson. If the goal goes to Pettersson, it means that Quinn Hughes has reached 300 assists for his career. Somebody texted in and tell me that stat for Quinn Hughes is true. His 300th assist. He's become the third fastest player in NHL history to hit 300 assists, as long as...
For D-men.
As long as that stat holds, that Pettersson did indeed score a goal.
So 346 games it took Bobby Orr, 368 games it took Brian Leetch, and Quinn Hughes slots in at 376, one game ahead of Paul Coffey, and then Gary Suter at 400.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned,
pretty good.
Cale Makar kind of on pace to be in this area as well.
Of course, yeah.
But nevertheless, Quinn Hughes, third fastest right now.
Yeah, it's a remarkable stat. You know, the reigning Norris Trophy winner, a very, very strong game here tonight for the Canucks. Broadway B on the text inbox says, what can you really say? Pettersson was on his game. Top six was clicking. The third line is buzzing. Sprong was defensively responsible. Hoglander was laying in the hits. Even Big D was making plays. They're starting to heat up, boys. That's Broadway B. And Big D, I think, is referring to Vinny Desharnais, who made a nice pass to Nils Hoglander. Mm-hmm. And there were other people texting in about Hoglander, too. He was very active on the forecheck. He was physical. He made things happen, had scoring chances.
Four hits tonight.
I thought this was one of the better games that we've seen from Nils Hoglander.
Yeah, and for a lot of players, too. Again, Desharnais played 16:31. I would have had to look that up because it felt fairly non-event for Vincent Desharnais. So getting 16 minutes tonight is really strong for him. And, yeah, it was just the thing I liked about that play on the Hoglander shot, which was Hoglander's lone shot of the evening, it was just a quick decision. Yeah, it was simple. It was in front of you. But you know, how many times have we seen Vincent Desharnais with the puck this year, whether it's coming out of his own zone or just in the neutral zone, just labor on a decision and take away, you know, opportunities that are in front of him? This was just a quick decision. Send it right back. Just a quick give and go with Hoglander, and Hoglander gets the shot off to test Dostal as well. So it was the quick decision-making, and for Desharnais finishes plus two, 16:31. That's really nice. Brännström got 16:06 tonight along the blue line as well. Carson Soucy, 17:06. Hronek, 20:52. Obviously, Quinn Hughes, your high watermark at 20:54. And then Tyler Myers also getting 20:48 himself. So it was fairly even as far as the minutes go.
Yeah, for the blue line for sure. And Connor Garland, did he lead all forwards in ice time tonight? It looks like it, doesn't it?
1957. I mean, well,
it's more than Quinn and more than Pettersson, so I would imagine he did indeed lead all Canuck forwards in ice time. Just shows you the level of trust.
By about a minute, too.
Yeah, and it wasn't just power play time and even strength. He played almost a full minute on the PK.
It's nice.
You know, so a very strong game from Connor Garland yet again. What a season he is putting together for the Vancouver Canucks. This one here says, I missed the game, but how was DeBrusk? I know he tipped home a point shot, but how effective was he tonight? That's Adam, the regulator from Pocomptum, texting in. I thought DeBrusk, again, he had, you know, second goal in back-to-back games. He had a couple good chances. I thought he was in and around it. I thought that line looked really good and solid. It wasn't this, I think, standout, magnificent performance from DeBrusk by any means, but I thought he was connecting play well, forechecking well, and, you know, we saw that shot, and now we saw that tip.
Was it the Tampa game or the Florida game where he had a bunch of chances and he didn't score?
think it was a Florida game.
Yeah. You know, maybe that one was more noticeable as far as, you know, goal scoring opportunities. But, you know, you have to feature on that line, right? You're playing with Miller, you're playing with Besser, and you have to just look active and, you know, getting the goal in this. And it was nice work throughout the whole sequence of this play, too, on his goal, because he wins a battle below the line where two Anaheim Ducks are on him, and he, you know, holds them off, kicks it over to Brock, and you watch this play when he gets to the front of the net as well. And I think it was Mintikov that he's battling with. But he puts a body into Mintikov early in this play, and then Mintikov the whole way is just trying to catch up to him, just to get position on him. So when DeBrusk turns back to pivot into the middle, he's already done all the good work necessary to get himself free. And so when that shot comes through, it's just easy for him to get a stick to it because of all the, you know, willing to engage early on in that battle.
Yeah, absolutely. And a nice play by DeBrusk, tipping home that Brock Besser shot to give the Canucks the 4-1 lead at the time. And then, of course, Danton Heinen made a 5-1. And we'll break down all the goals coming up in a little bit. We are going to get to the head coach coming up in just a moment, but let's take one more phone call here, and let's go to Mike in New West. Mike, thanks for calling in, and what are your thoughts here tonight after a 5-1 Canucks win over the Ducks?
Hey, gents, big fan here. Was looking forward to seeing you at the Autism Network, but didn't get a chance to.
Next time, man.
Absolutely. You guys kind of answered my question about Hoglander, but... I'll say this. I was listening to Hoffer and Bruff today, and they were talking about, you know, a potential trade because of Hoglander's pretty good contract, and he's tradable. But, you know, him kind of, if we had to, we could step up Lekkerimäki in there or Atu Ratu or Baines. But, you know, he played really good today. He was really physical, you know, only 13 minutes of ice time previous to his 10 and no hits. I think it's the most hits he's had this year. But what do you guys think about if Canucks really had to trade him? Do you guys have an opinion on who they could get, you know, as a defender or another prospect or something for him? Because his contract is looking pretty tradable.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, thanks for the phone call. That's Mike in New West calling in. He's very tradable, there's no doubt. And the contract is certainly not onerous, $3 million per year. But for this year, he's only making 1.1. So it makes him a very attractive player this year, too, because it's easy to fit in for any team. The thing, though, is I don't think that Hoglander, as an alone asset, as just him alone, is going to get you a top four defenseman. Top four defensemen go for more premium assets. Could it be Hoglander as part of a package? Sure, right? Hoglander plus plus, you can maybe work something out. I just don't know if Hoglander alone is going to get you the asset that you want, ultimately speaking.
And you and I were chatting about this, too, earlier today. Pending on the salary cap machinations they want to do from now till the deadline, look, there's a good chance that they can give themselves a pretty big shot of acquiring a pretty high price player.
Yeah.
And that's not even talking about if Hoglander's removed from the equation too. So that would free up a little bit of money as well. But nevertheless, like, there are going to be teams that are saying, all right, that's an interesting piece, but it's the secondary piece. If you were to make a big trade, the prize jewels people are still going to go after are Willander, are going to be Lekkerimäki, first-round pick.
Yeah, if you're looking at a legitimate top four defenseman or a young one with control, it's going to cost you more. Could you get Hoglander for rental defenseman? Probably. But is that what you want to do with Hoglander, right? So I think ultimately I could see it happen. I'm not against. Again, I'm always open to listen to any sort of trade scenario. It's more about what's realistic and your ability to win those trades. I'm just not sure Hoglander is getting you the value you want unless he's part of a package. And that creates the bigger issue is how much is Vancouver willing to trade and how many futures are you willing to move to get what you're looking for? And are you willing to move a guy like Hoglander? But to answer the question, I think you can get value for him on rental side. But if you're trying to make a hockey deal for somebody to be here long term, it would cost more than just Hoglander.
He'd really have to blow the walls down here of the offensive production. And I'm just curious, now back in that, you know, depth role, 13 minutes tonight, is he going to get that opportunity to put up consistently half point a game.
Yeah, he had. Yeah, I mean, he had 24 goals last year. Can he replicate that? And that's something to kind of bear in mind as we get closer to the trade deadline. All right, we'll get to more of your reaction on the text inbox and more of your phone calls, and we'll get to Ian McIntyre in the final segment, and we'll break down the goals coming up. But before we do all that, let's go to Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown.
Rick, we saw Quinn hit that 300 mark fast, third fastest for an NHL defenseman to do so. Is that shocking at all to see him do that tonight?
No, I mean, he's obviously controlling a lot of the play. Special player. He gets a lot of shots off. That's hard to do. And especially when teams are keen on you. So, I'm not shocked.
Where's your confidence level with him at so far this season, just with a couple weeks?
It's just he's, been here a couple of years, and he's a pleasure to coach. He's just loves hockey. He always tries to work on his game. That's what I love about him.
Maybe take a look at the game as a whole, your thoughts on the team's performance, a couple minutes to warm into it, but it seemed like a good game overall.
Yeah, I thought all four lines contributed. I thought it was a, well-managed game. To win this game, 2-0 on the road trip. We learned a little bit from the San Jose game, and we had a couple of good video sessions yesterday, a good practice, and I think that's the key for this team.
We also saw Antti Raatu slide into the lineup. How'd you see him fit in tonight?
Yeah, I thought as the game went on, I liked his game. He's hard on pucks. That line was actually pretty Hoglander. I thought he had playing a really north-south type of game. So yeah, I thought he did a nice job.
Pedersen's goal right in front, creating the screen, and obviously Tippett as well. But that's where he's got to be, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, those are the ones you want to get. They're not going to be all pretty.
Why does he keep containing Anaheim tonight? They have some pretty fast players, but you seem to contain them very well.
Yeah, I think we played a north-south game. I thought early, and then there was parts of the second we weren't holding on to the pucks, but when we were, I thought it really helped our game. We were really clean, not a couple, but odd man rushes has been a problem this year for us. I think it was one of our better games. I think that helps when you play, they got some young, talented players. They're going to be good, but I think when we limited their odd man rushes, it really helped us.
Was the Sherwood goal an example of kind of the new wrinkle you want, coach, in terms of the breakout, play along the wall, and then
I thought Heinen played their climb out of the corner perfectly. And then he was aggressive and got it. And then obviously we counterattacked and got something off the rush. I thought we got a couple of rush goals tonight. It's nice to see.
He's got three assists for 300 in his career. It's a big number for a young guy like that.
Yeah, it's a huge number. He keeps climbing and climbing. So, it was just a terrific job.
That is Canucks head coach at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown. From Vision Reality, Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. Of course, full of praise for Quinn Hughes, mentioning that he's not surprised at all that he's had his 300 assist as the third fastest defenseman to get to that total, and was happy with the overall team game tonight, as you would imagine he would be.
Yeah, and Pedersen in the right spots.
Yeah.
Now just got to produce more. But, fairly light work from Rick Tocchet there. I guess the Anaheim Ducks brought it out of them. Just light work. Didn't have to do too much. Just a low-event game, which I imagine, the coach, after what he's seen over the past week with, the New Jersey game, I could really use a low-event night in Anaheim. We're happy to oblige.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Canucks, they took advantage of what they had for them. I mean, and the Ducks, you can tell, they're not a really strong hockey team. And I think one of the things we talked about before the game was Lucas Dostal, their goaltender, he's really been the backbone of this team.
Oh, yeah.
And he made a number of really solid saves tonight. Like, if it wasn't for him, I know he allowed five, but it easily could have been
worse. It could have been worse. And, Dumoulin was kind of all over the place and in moments. And, they just look like they got a lot of work to do. And I know there's some conversation, Cam Fowler, how long does that go on and on. But, man, they look like they are going to be years away from being functional in the Pacific Division.
Yeah, 100%. This text message here, Gary in the Lower Mainland says, if the Canucks play with as much passion and desire from here on out, then I will have a lot of hope. But this was the Ducks. They need to provide the same intensity with the best teams in the league. I'm always positive, but for the best, this team needs to continue winning, and we don't lose hope again. And that is Gary in the Lower Mainland.
I'm not even sure if tonight was about passion or intensity. It was just sound.
It was sound. Yeah, and that's what you wanted to see. Yeah. You wanted to see them play a sound hockey game. And I see people texting in, and there's somebody who texts in all the time and says the only reason the Canucks have won games is beating non-playoff teams. And
hey, which is fair.
Fair, but hey, all you can do is beat the teams in front of you, and that's what the Canucks have done. And can they be better against better teams? Sure. It's to me, it's too early in the season to sit here and say the Canucks only beat bad teams.
But the thing is, like last year there was markers of games where like they looked impressive, and you could say, okay, that's the type of game that can go up against anybody. And it was proven over the course of a season that, yeah, they can contend with anybody. And obviously it goes to seven games with Edmonton, and it looked functional. At least you had an identity. And that's what this game to me was. And we saw a flash of it against Florida, and we saw a flash of it there already to begin the season against Philly. You think, all right, it's turning around. And then it crumbled away against Chicago and Pittsburgh and leading into Carolina and New Jersey. But this one was a bit of a reclaiming of, okay, they can replicate this version at different tempos, you hope, but you would hope that it can play like this going into this LA, Edmonton, Calgary, Islanders stretch here, and we'll see what that looks like. And if they can do that, you know, if they get back to the way that they can check and be tough defensively, then you can go up against anybody. And it's just a matter of, you know, can you skate with everyone? The expectation would be they can.
Yeah, 100%. And there's a lot that obviously you want to see against better teams. And I think the game coming up on Thursday against the LA Kings is another litmus test here, right? The Kings won tonight. They've been playing a lot better hockey recently. They're a team that is trying to rectify its plays from last year, and they were a playoff team. They've missed Drew Doughty so far, but their team game has been solid. Their top-end forwards have put a lot of pressure on the opposing team. So that, I think, is going to be a nice test here for the Canucks to see exactly where the game is on this road trip. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. You are listening to the Canucks Central Post Game Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. More coming up next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd
and Thomas Drantz.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
This is the Canucks Central Post Game Show.
Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650,
and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Dumped in by McTavish, Lankinen out of the goal, leaves for Heronen. He'll spin it up the near side for Danton Heinen. Nice drop to protect it from Zellweger. Gets it to center for Sherwood. Right wing for Brännström. Up in the rush, back to Sherwood. High slot, he scores! Kiefer Sherwood with a one-timer off the rush from the top of the circles. Gives the Canucks the lead. It's 2-1 with 2:40 left in the first.
The Canucks playing fast through the neutral zone as Kiefer Sherwood blasts one past Lukas Dostal. And this starts in the Canucks zone. An excellent play along the boards by Danton Heinen to further the puck through the neutral zone.
Yeah, I thought Heinen played their climb out of the corner perfectly. And then he was aggressive and got it. And then obviously we counterattacked and got some off the rush. I thought we got a couple of rush goals tonight. It's nice to see.
Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet happy with how his team played tonight, creating chances off the rush and goals and not giving up a ton to the Anaheim Ducks in a 5-1 road victory. And this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar, and keep your thoughts coming in to our text inbox, courtesy of Dunbar Lumber, 650-650. Phone boards are also open, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. We are going to break down the goals. You heard them coming in. But before we do that, Bick, what are the people saying in the text inbox?
650-650. Tyler and Langley, two regulation losses in 11 games. Canucks sitting comfortably in the top three in their division. Aren't even in form. The critics will always be there. This one, 650-650. Is Kiefer Sherwood the next breakout player? Like Dakota Joshua last year, 7 points, 11 games now, leads the league and hits great on both sides of the puck. That's a pretty good shout. Is he this year's Dakota Joshua? That's pretty strong. That line, again, having another nice night. Teddy Bluger, 14-16. Kiefer Sherwood, 12 in ice time. And Danton Heinen, who I thought his best game, 12-45. But you just heard Rick Tocchet there. Just, you know, they were just good along the boards and able to create a couple of rush opportunities for them. Sherwood obviously gets the goal there, and it stems from in their own end. Yeah. And then the Heinen goal, Heinen works off the boards and rejoins the play and gets there for the opportunity. And plus, Teddy Bluger had a breakaway. as well this evening. It's just a strong night for that line. And it's a good shout that if Kiefer Sherwood is this year's Dakota Joshua.
Yeah, I mean, and as far as taking that step, I could totally see it. And something we talked about before the year, like, I really like Kiefer Sherwood's mm-hmm. game. Tim texts in and says, this one is for you, Sat. Who finishes the season with more goals? Your boy, and projected 40 goal scorer Kiefer Sherwood or Petey? That's Tim texting in. I'd still shade Pedersen by the end of the year is going to have more goals than Kiefer Sherwood. And of course, we joke about, if you don't know the bit by now, during the offseason, I was a big fan of the Sherwood signing and said, hey, I can see him taking another step, having a career high in goals and scoring over 40 or, you know, 15 or more goals this year. And that turned out to, you know, it caught a life of its own with people joking and saying, Sat said 20 goals, 40 goals, 70 goals. But yes, Kiefer Sherwood, if he does score 20, 30 goals, I'm going to sit here big and say I called it. I'll take the credit, even though I didn't say it, if he does it.
I think Tim might have texted that one in before the goal was changed to Pedersen, because that text looked better when he was two goals up and it's 3-1. Now it's 3-2, because obviously the goal, the third goal of the game gets changed to, or the Canucks' third goal got changed to Elias Pettersson. So he's only one behind.
Only one back. Kirk and Quitlam says, another building block, great effort. Jake starting to fire up. That is Jake DeBrus scoring in back-to-back games. We'll talk about his goal. I know you broke it down a little bit earlier, Bick, but mm-hmm. let's get to the goals the Canucks scored. And the first goal of the game actually went to the Anaheim Ducks. They made it 1-0 on an Olin Zellweger point shot on the power play that just kind of found its way through. I don't know how much analysis this needs. The Ducks win the faceoff, get a shot off right away. Lankinen makes a save. I guess the only play in question here is Soucy has the puck on a stick briefly. Could he have done better to get the puck out or whatever?
I think a clearance goes off a skate, goes off of Lankinen right out front.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to pin it on him, but that's, I guess, somewhat of a chance to get it out. And after that, the puck goes around. The next thing you know, it's in the back of the net.
Yeah, it's just a good screen by Mason McTavish. You know, full credit when credit is due, and it's a goal that they create. And, you know, Lankinen's kind of looking on one side, and then as he's transitioning to look on the other side, McTavish flashes across his face, and in comes the shot from Zellweger, just finds its way through.
Yeah, 100%. And that's the Anaheim Ducks making a 1-0 at that point. And the Canucks, well, they get on the power play themselves, and that is when they draw blood on the man advantage. And, you know, we talk about Brock Besser really building on last year. Well, he continues leading this league, this team in goals, Bick. It's his sixth goal of the season. This one comes on a man advantage.
And I love the ownership by Brock on this, because you can see as this play is developing, he signals Connor Garland to get out of the bumper, man. This is my area.
This is
where I score goals. And he, you know, as he waves him away, Garland kind of navigates to new space on the ice, and he draws Killorn away. And so as Miller and Hughes kind of work this 1-2 game, and Hughes, you know, cuts back to create a better angle, it's this little gap that he shoots through, because Killorn has closed some of it down, but we're talking about inches. If he's a little bit over beforehand and he doesn't get drawn away by Garland, does that get taken away? But it's there, and you know, he shoots for the back post looking for the tip, and there's Brock Besser redirecting it up high.
Yeah, and good job by Brock Besser. He's done a fantastic job when it's come to the tips and playing the net front and, you know, being in and around it. And, you know, we wondered, can he build, can he keep up that scoring pace? Hey, I'm not saying he's going to score, you know, 50 plus. He's on pace for 50 plus right now. But, he's answering those questions about the goal scoring rate. He's carrying that over to this season. And the Canucks kept it going. And, you know, my boy, Kiefer Sherwood, you know, we've seen him score with his wrist shot. We've seen him obviously be a physical entity out there, throwing the body around, getting the opposite under the opposition's skin.
Just three hits tonight.
Just three hits. So a bit lazy here for Kiefer Sherwood tonight. Only three hits on the evening. And when you've had double digits, you know, three hits doesn't sound that impressive, but it's still three hits in a game. That's still very, very solid. And, you know, he shows the velocity on his slap shot here.
Smoked this one.
It's put on a tee by Brännström, but let's go back to how this play comes to be. And the one guy you have to give some credits to is the guy who makes the play happen coming out of the zone, and that's Danton Heinen.
Yeah, Sherwood's the one who's going to get a lot of hype on this because of the way he smacked that puck for the goal, but Brännström and Heinen deserve a ton of credit on this goal. You know, Heinen with some good work along the puck just to hold off a D-man and work it up, and then the puck gets swung around by Hronek, and you watch this play, there's two Ducks below the line, and Brännström realizes, and he's quick up the ice, and he, you know, fills in the right side of the ice, gets that puck on an exit by Sherwood, and then It's a backhand sauce, just leaves it on a plate right for Sherwood to skate into. And yeah, he absolutely destroys that puck for the second goal.
Yeah, it's just an absolute bomb from Kiefer Sherwood. And it made it 2-1. Brännström and Danton Heinen get the assist. And Hughes and Miller got the assist on the first goal by the Canucks. And then the goal we've been talking about, the goal that we believe is Elias Pettersson's based on it being changed. But it was initially credited to Quinn Hughes. And this play, honestly, a lot of the credit should go to Connor Garland. Mm-hmm. He's the one who has his own entry. He sets up Pettersson for that great chance in the slot. I know Vincent Poco sent us a video of that goal and says, hey, Pettersson mishandles the puck, like, you know, lack of confidence maybe. He mishandles, he whiffs on the first attempt, but then he gets another attempt on goal. It gets cleared to the wall, and that's where the play comes around to Quinn Hughes. But Connor Garland really made this play happen.
Yeah, and it's an easy entry because it looks like there's a bit of a sloppy line change by Anaheim in this play. Is there's a regroup in the neutral zone, and even on the final goal too, there's a bad line change. It looks like Anaheim needs some staples on their line changes right now. But yeah, Connor Garland feeds Pettersson inside. He makes the initial save, and there's Garland to clean up a rebound, and it just goes around again. It's very similar to the Mason McTavish goal, or sorry, the Zellweger goal where McTavish is screening. Pettersson's out front, and I think Dostal kind of makes it harder on himself because Pettersson's stationary, mm-hmm. whereas McTavish was moving and making it
more of a flash screen.
Yeah, he's making it harder on Lankinen, so Lankinen's moving his own head. Pettersson's stationary, and he's trying to get a stick on the puck, which clearly he does. But Dostal's like looking around Pettersson. It looked like he had eyes on Hughes, and the shot goes against the grain as he's changing his vantage point, and it just goes to the back post, and Pettersson clearly gets a stick on it as well.
Yeah, and good on Pettersson on the net front, and obviously Hughes doing his thing from the point, but a lot of that good play on the goal gets credited to Connor Garland, who makes the play on the entry, the pass over to Pettersson, also the pass along the boards to get it over to Quinn Hughes. The Canucks, well, obviously, at this point, they're rolling. They're up 3-1. They're absolutely all over the Anaheim Ducks. And this is in the second period before the Canucks scored a couple more in the third, Bick, where things really opened up for them. They had a couple, you know, I think Suter had his breakaway after this, too.
Yeah.
They had a few.
Hoglander
had a chance. Hoglander had a couple of chances. And they really were all over the Anaheim Ducks and could have easily scored a goal or two before the third period comes, the second period came to an end.
The power play had a moment as well because Pettersson had a one-timer off of faceoff that was blocked, and then there was another chance kind of worked out in front. It wasn't, you know, pass tic-tac-toe setting up Pettersson. It was kind of a loose puck that ends up with Pettersson, and he shoots for the corner, but it looked like an active, you know, confident shot, but Dostal was there to shoulder it away.
Yeah, and the other look they had on that power play was Pettersson to Besser in the bumper spot, and it was a good look, but couldn't get the shot off. He was closed down by the Ducks defenders, but that's about as close as they got on the power play after scoring on that man advantage. Heading over to the third period, the Canucks added to their lead. Jake DeBrusk, and I know you talked about this a bit earlier, but body position makes such a big difference, and we know that DeBrusk has a good frame, good forechecker, can finish too. Hasn't really put it together, but here's a play where he puts that together and also active hands to get that tip in.
Yeah, full package here. Behind the line, along the boards, winning battles against two players, working out in front. And also, look, we got a flood of texts as soon as this goal went in. Like, Quinn Hughes, what a player, right? And it's not as if he went around some lumbering player. And Trevor Zegras is not, you know, a checker by any means, but he's a mobile, agile player. And Quinn Hughes just turns him to dust, so much so that Brian Dumoulin had to go all Leroy Jenkins on this and leave Brock Besser and go after Quinn Hughes. And, you know, Quinn sees two guys coming towards him, says, all right, I'll just feed it to Brock. And Brock's all alone and takes this shot, and it's an easy play for Jake DeBrusk then, because he's done good work beforehand in a battle with Mintikov and gets his tip on it. But Quinn Hughes just, it's a shimmy shake, and he finds himself in space, makes a quick decision to Brock Besser, and there's your goal.
Well, and you know, for a guy like DeBrusk, when he's feeling good, it puts things together, and you kind of saw that there on that play. Made it 4-1 for the Canucks and really salted this game away. Besser and Quinn Hughes both getting assists. And then Danton Heinen. Kiefer Sherwood was a former Anaheim Duck. He scored against the Anaheim Ducks. Danton Heinen, also a former Anaheim Duck. He also scored against the Anaheim Ducks to make it 5-1. And this one, it's a good play by Teddy Bluger to Sherwood, who finds Heinen.
Yeah.
But they find themselves, I don't know if was it a bad line change by the Ducks again. They kind of get caught up ice, and next thing you know, they have a chance going down the other way.
You know, there was a part of this goal, the Bluger part, where he drives deep and just puts it off the wall back to Sherwood, where you remember when it started with Bluger, Sherwood, and Joshua last year, and they were just doing chip-ins to the corner, just a couple of quick passes, and then right out front, and there's a Joshua, there's Garland converting some chances. It felt like that in a moment, where it's high and strong off the wall, out of the zone, and Bluger driving deep back to Sherwood, and the first shot gets blocked, and then all alone in front, it's Sherwood and Heinen, and yeah. He feeds it across, but it looks so similar to when we saw that first kind of seeds of the third line last year, starting to put it together, playing the Rick Tocchet way. We kept referencing them as like the rush opportunities and, you know, chipping the bodies and chipping the puck in and chasing after it, being quick with it, being direct. It was all that line last year, kind of being the leaders in that. And this felt like, you know, that line, the third line, another Bluger line here, exhibiting the principles of what Rick Tocchet wants to see. And he mentioned, yeah, a couple of rush goals tonight. Yeah. Well, it was Heinen, that's a rush goal, and it was the Sherwood goal, that's a rush goal.
Yeah, and both are that line, right? And, you know, they're all, you know, Bluger, Sherwood, and Heinen, all 3+2. Heinen, a goal and an assist. Sherwood, a goal and an assist. And Teddy Bluger gets a helper as well. So that's 5 points for that line tonight.
Huge.
Very, very solid showing. Terrific performance from that trio tonight to help the Canucks with the 5-1 victory. Jim, the energy guy, texts in and says, to be fair to Kiefer, we were talking about him having 3 hits on the night, and he says, to be fair to Kiefer, he's trying to hit the Ducks, but they were avoiding him so much that he started verbally calling them out for it. Jim, the energy guy. You know, there was one comment he had. It was in the first period. Yeah. Not safe for work. We're not going to repeat it. But yeah, it's kind of, I'd say he was calling the Ducks player a coward.
Yeah.
I think more or less.
44, the Canucks' best player. This guy is awesome. That text came in earlier. This one, 650, 650. I think we've gone through all the Sherwood texts now.
Yeah, I mean, hey, Sherwood deserves a credit. He is becoming a fan favorite.
Oh, here's one. He's a beast. Fabulous signing. There you go.
Love it. Love it. Chris from the Ridge. Hey, Bick, did Petey really have 6 shots on goal?
Elias Pettersson, you know what? They've given him another one. So he's up to 9 attempts tonight.
9. So he has 5 shots. He had 5 shots on goal.
No, 6.
6? Did it change it to 6? Okay.
It's 6.
Because of the goal, right?
Shot attempts with 3 more attempts.
Yeah, so he had 6 shots on goal tonight, and he had 9 attempts tonight. And, you know,
they hadn't counted all the shots yet.
They hadn't counted. Hey, listen, sometimes it's too close to call. This one wasn't quite too close to call.
He might get more shots later.
Maybe we'll see on a rewatch if they see something different on a rewatch of the game. we'll leave it at that for the time being. But, I thought Pettersson was active tonight. I thought he had a solid game. You know what? But, again, like, I'm not going to sit here and say he's back, so to speak. You know, like,
it's the shot attempts that is the most encouraging part of it.
Well, the other thing that was encouraging, and I turned to you at one point in this game, Vic, and I said he's skating better tonight. It looks like this is one of the games he's skated better at. It looks a little bit quicker. And it's fine margins here. But tonight was the fastest Elias Pettersson has skated all season long.
Now, there's a caveat with that.
Yes. So his top speed, Bick, heading into the game had been this year, 21.27, you said?
Somewhere in that range, yeah.
2.7 or 2.8. Let's just say 2.8 for argument's sake. Tonight, Elias Pettersson's top speed, which was the second fastest max speed clocked tonight in the game. The fastest skater tonight that was clocked was Isaac Lundestrom of the Anaheim Ducks at 22 miles an hour, 0.08. 22.08. Elias Pettersson at 21.58. Now, okay, it's 0.3 faster than the fastest time he's had. Small, marginal. But this was as well as we've seen him skate. And is it a coincidence where his skating is even fractionally better than it's been and it's more noticeable than it's been? He's at his top speed more tonight that he was more dangerous.
Now,
it goes back to the coach saying, move your feet.
Yes. Now, the caveat is last year, his top speed in any game was 22.48, so nearly a full mile an hour faster.
So 0.9 miles an hour faster.
Yes. And then the year before, he was up over 23 miles an hour. So
almost 2 miles
an hour. It was 23.31.
Okay. So almost 1 and almost 2 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So you may look at that and say it's not, you know, it's not huge, and it's not, but it does show that he hasn't been at his pace.
It matters. Yeah.
The bigger thing is, and we haven't seen this here yet, and I'm looking forward to maybe seeing it on the edge stats, the bursts is what we haven't seen enough of. And last year, he had those bursts of, you know, 40 miles an hour or 20 to 40 miles an hour, and he had 111 of them. Coming into tonight's game, I think he had 0. that not tells great. You, you know, not and great. That yeah. burst hasn't quite been there in this game. But that was a bit more noticeable tonight, and we'll see if he had that. Not to get too, you know, nerdy with the speed and the skating, but it just illuminates the point that when he is playing quicker, he is playing a little bit faster, he can be a more effective player, and I thought that was the case here tonight. What else are you seeing here on the text inbox, Bick? 650, 650.
Just give me a second here. All right, this one. Huggy, 10 more years. Please, he will get better. He is so special. That one's from Gary. This one, Tyler, good for Elias Pettersson, but can't forget, it's another bottom barrel team. Need to see this against non-mediocre teams. And this one, Jokes per 60. The most important thing to happen down south today, Elias Pettersson finds the score sheet. That's Hussein from Coquitlam.
I like it. Jokes for 60. Keep them coming in. This one here from Armchair Dan and Poco says, honestly, after the game, I don't think people are interested in my same old takes, but I don't live game to game anymore. I fan through the lens of how to win the cup. I'm that light. Here's what I think is most relevant. Get Hughes on the right half wall on the power play. On PP entries, get at least three guys flying with speed. And if you can't carry the puck, dump it in. Three, get PD in a shutdown role with Heinen and Sherwood, perhaps. Four, Brännström with Quinn to Hronek. Brännström with Quinn, so Hronek can try with Soucy. Tocchet needs to lean into his own philosophy and learn to play uncomfortable. That's Dan in Poco. Fair suggestions. I'm not against trying those things. As far as Brännström with Quinn, I think that's interesting. The only thing is, do you want one of those guys playing their offside defensively? We saw it being problematic for Brännström the other night playing. I know he can do it offensively. It's more about defensively and some of those reads. But I would like to maybe see Hughes and Hronek and Soucy at some point. I don't mind seeing that at some point.
Well, we had a question as well, 650, 650. About Hughes and Hronek. I'm just trying to bring it up here. Good evening, gentlemen. I was wondering what your thoughts on splitting Hughes and Hronek as a means to benefit Hronek. The pair are crossing at the blue line, and Hughes is opening up for one-timers. Hronek is opening up for one-timers. But Hughes' new and improved shot and shot mentality is leaving Hronek providing very little in the offensive zone. He has a bullet, and it's being underutilized. Yeah, it's interesting. The thing is, we don't really see consistent pairs through this grouping right now.
No, I mean,
like tonight was a night where the minutes were allocated relatively evenly, but there's been some nights where it's been 24, 25 minutes for Hughes and 11 minutes for a Desharnais or a Brännström.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as much as we try to plot out, be like, oh, it's these guys all the time, it hasn't really been the case. So I think you're just going to see Hughes and Hronek together so much. And I don't know if there's regular pairs that you're going to look at and say, yeah, like this is what it should be. Because I think you just find bad combinations if you break up Hughes Hronek.
I think so. I think the edge you're getting with Hughes and Hronek together is greater than any other thing that you can do. I think, right? And when you look at how much those two guys have tilted the ice in their favor, they've been one of the most dominant pairs in the league as far as creating offense and not giving up a lot going the other way. Sure, there have been some mistakes here and there, but generally speaking, that pair has been very dominant. It's always tough for a coach or a team to go away for something that's dominant.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's been some other issues here. I did think tonight Brännström and Desharnais had a terrific game for a third pair.
It was definitely Desharnais' best game.
Yeah. Again, quality of competition allows them to have an easier time, and they took advantage of it, no doubt about it. I still want to see more out of Soucy and Myers. But ultimately, and we don't need to get into this now, we'll talk about this on the other side, and you know, there's been some rumors of defense when the Canucks have been after. But ultimately, they need somebody else. Because the reason fans, and they're not wrong in bringing up the idea of splitting Hughes and Hronek, is you kind of need another guy that can carry a deep pair.
Yeah, and right now, again, in the early part of the season, I would just bank points, and if your best way to win is through Hughes Hronek together, do that until, like we saw last year, late November is when they went and acquired someone else who can log big minutes, Nikita Zadorov. So is there a trade on the horizon somewhere in the next 6 weeks?
Yeah, exactly, and that's something to kind of keep in mind. All right, we'll get to that and more, plus we'll hear from Ian McIntyre as the Canucks Central postgame show continues on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Back to Minchikov. He's hit into the boards by Sherwood, and Heinen gets it off the wall and out to center for Teddy Bluger, driving into the Anaheim zone. Forced wide by Dumoulin. Bluger hits the trailer. Sherwood in the slot with the shot. It's blocked. Gets his own rebound in front for Heinen, who scores. Kiefer Sherwood didn't give up on the play, and Danton Heinen tucks it home from off the left wing. It's 5-1 Canucks.
And this third line keeps on scoring for the Vancouver Canucks. It starts with Teddy Bluger coming down the right-hand side, slams the brakes, waiting for his teammates, waiting for support. And Kiefer Sherwood takes the first shot, which is blocked, but keeps going with the play to set up Danton Heinen, who's all by himself on the left post, to tap it in against his old team to make it 5.
Canucks 5-1 victory over the Ducks in Anaheim, and this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bic Nizar, and you heard us breaking down the goals a bit earlier on. It was 5 goals by the Vancouver Canucks this evening, and the first player who scored tonight for the Canucks was Brock Besser to give them the lead. Then Kiefer Sherwood, then Elias Pettersson, then Jake DeBrusk, and finally Danton Heinen, 5 unanswered goals to give the Canucks the victory. And that is the game review brought to you by BC Honda dealers. Love a good save, then you'll love the all-new, all-electric Honda Prologue EV. Score up to $8,000 in combined rebates. Visit bchonda.ca. And Bic, we are going to get to Ian McIntyre coming up in a little bit, and we'll get to some of these thoughts on the text inbox, 650-650. Keep them coming in. But I did want to address the one thing that has been asked about in the text inbox, and I can't find the specific one. There's been a lot of them being asked, and the rumor that came out, you know, has been out the last couple of days, not necessarily about the Canucks specifically, but, you know, it's been some speculation about could the Canucks be interested? Has there been some sort of talks? And that centers around Buffalo Sabres defenseman Bowen Byram. Some reporting by various insiders that teams have been asking about Bowen Byram. No reports specifically about the Canucks calling and talking about him, but you can put two and two together with the Canucks calling teams. And like Frank Saravalli told us on our Monday regular hit on Canucks Central, that the Canucks have been active doing reconnaissance and asking teams about players and who's available and what the cost would be. And a player teams are asking about is Bowen Byram. So the question a lot of people are posing is Bowen Byram a player the Canucks should go after, and B, is he an attainable player for the Vancouver Canucks?
Color me skeptical on he's attainable, but you know there's a situation in Buffalo right now where it's really interesting. Samuelson and Jokiharju were healthy scratches tonight. Now Samuelson to me is more of the headline there than Jokiharju, but nevertheless, you know there's issues there of what's their regular lineup going to be, and you know that's a team right now that expected to take a big step this season, and it hasn't really gone that way, and it's difficult. It's difficult to make that surge up the standings, and here they are. They're sitting with 11 points in 13 games.
Yeah, so they've had some struggles. The issue with Byram has been, and if you want to get a deeper dive into this topic and also Byram specifically, what's happened with him in Buffalo, make sure to check out the Canucks Central podcast. The open, we've got into the Byram thing, myself and Reach, you know, a bit of a deep dive. And also we spoke to Shayna Goldman from The Athletic about Byram and the season he's had so far in Buffalo and the fit in Buffalo. And it hasn't gone great.
I just don't think there's a good fit there.
Exactly. Like the fit hasn't been great. And it's not like he's performing all that well. But the thing that you have to keep in mind is they traded for him less than a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave up Casey Mittelstadt to get him less than a year ago. If they're trading Bowen Byram, and it's still very much an if they're going to, he's not, you know, right now available according to insiders teams are asking, they probably want something similar to what they gave up to acquire him. Or you're not punting on the asset that quickly. So let's say the ask is at the very least the price they paid. Is that even something that works with the Vancouver Canucks? Now, granted, from a monetary standpoint, he's making 3.85 on the cap as an RFA. So for this year, it fits in. You can make that work. The number's, you know, not onerous in any way. You can, the contract part of it, that's another separate conversation, an extension at some point. But the money works. You can make that work. The question is, for a team that is not keen on futures, which is my understanding and also some of the things we've heard, they're looking at immediate help if they're trading him. Does that line up as a good trade partner for Vancouver?
No, not really. And I don't know the role if it would be here in Vancouver.
I think the role in Vancouver would be that he's your second pairing defenseman. Like he carries your second pairing. And honestly, with the way Soucy's gone, and who, again, in this organization, who's knocking on the door to be the next top four lefty defenseman?
That's fair. I totally get it. At his peak, mm-hmm. Bo and Byron could be a top pairing demon.
Yeah.
And I think part of the, you know, want or desire, I'm not saying he demanded a trade out of Colorado, but you know, part of it is, well, I'm never going to run a power play here. I'm never going to be the guy on Colorado with Cale Makar there. And you go to Buffalo and it's Rasmus Dahlin.
Yeah.
And if it were to come here, it's Quinn Hughes, right? Mm-hmm. Like that is the triumphant of great D-men in the league to be under an umbrella of. And so, you know, we've chatted about this. It's not about finding a talent, and I believe supremely in the talent of Bo and Byron.
Well, I mean, if there's anybody on this station, and I know Fast Eddie Gregory saw a lot of Bo and Byron too, but I mean,
those 2 years,
you guys,
right?
you were doing post games, you were at the Langley Event Center watching Bo and Byron on a regular basis.
Yeah, like I think he's a fantastic player. It's just, is the skill set what the Canucks need? And yeah, they need a puck mover and all these things. They also need just a stout penalty killer. That to me is the thing of, I'd rather find the skill set of someone that is a good penalty killer, a good skater, and a good passer. I know that's some dream stuff, but
right.
I don't feel like they have to go out and search for a guy who can run a power play. And Bo and Byron can do that, but it's just you're paying for a luxury at that stage because you have Hronek, and worst case, we're talking about third guy, but you can go after or you can put Branstrom in that spot, and he'd also thrive.
Yeah, is it a dire need for the Vancouver Canucks to acquire what Bo and Byron brings? I'm not quite so sure. I mean, if you can get him, great, but are you going to pay a ransom to get him? I'd lean towards no.
And even if you were willing to trade a ransom, let's say for argument's sake that the Canucks were willing to trade Willander for him. Is that even a trade that Buffalo wants to make? Now, Willander's a righty defenseman, but how many years away is he? And what are their immediate desires? Is it a defenseman or is it a forward? And do you want futures or do you want immediate help? So let's say that's off the table.
If I'm Buffalo and I'm getting Tom Willander and I haven't made the playoffs in an eternity, what does Tom Willander do to help that process along?
Yeah.
Fair. And I know Canucks fans are already typing and saying, don't trade Willander. If you want Byram, I'm sure these are the names that come up. But if Buffalo doesn't want futures and wants immediate help, what immediate help can the Canucks provide that would be equivalent to Casey Mittelstadt? The only guy really is Brock Besser, but he's UFA at the end of the season, so it's a big contract going over. And if you trade Besser, you kind of need to find another guy to score 30 goals for you to come in too, right? So I just don't see it aligning. And I know people say, what about Hoglander?
Who does Besser play with, say, if that trade goes down in Buffalo? Who's the center?
Tage Thompson. Does he bring Dylan Cousins to life? Or maybe he doesn't work out there, right?
Mm-hmm. I'd rather have JT Miller as Besser's center than, say, Tage Thompson, right?
I don't disagree either. Now, you know, the other part of it too is like even Hoglander, people are asking about him. I don't think like Mittelstadt's a superior player. So if Mittelstadt's the bar, at least today, if you're looking at this, I don't think Hoglander reaches that bar either.
And does he move the meter in Buffalo?
Right. I mean, hey, if he does, if they make that trade,
huge windfall.
Sure. I just don't know. So to answer the question on Bo and Byron, that's kind of where things are at, even though he is a player that, you know, teams are sniffing around.
Look, don't get me wrong, right? I keep my own personal list of like, oh, I'd love to see if this guy ever became available. And Bo and Byron is right near the top of that list for me. I just don't see the fit.
Yeah.
I would love for it to happen. Obviously, you know, BC product and all that, but I'm just not sure how it comes together.
Yeah. Colin from the Caribou, Hoglander, Raymond, Ballard, and a third for Byron.
Wait, it's a third? It's not a second?
It's not a second. We downgraded because we're adding Hoglander to it. You know, so you go down around the draft. But yeah, that's a good thought. 650-650, Dunbar Lumber, text message, inbox. Dave says, Connor Garland, 10 points in 11 games to start the year. Terrific. And I mean, absolutely dynamite. Like, what else do we say about Connor Garland? We mentioned how he led the team in ice time tonight. We gave him a lot of credit on the Pettersson goal, I suppose, now with the zone entry and the play over to Pettersson, and also making the play to Quinn Hughes on the point shot. Just a dependable, active player who also had almost a minute of PK time tonight.
Real top six player.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a huge step. You know, 1957 tonight for Connor Garland.
Yeah.
I'll try to bring up what his highest ice time totals were in his career, but it's an unreal night for him. And again, it's been one of the most positive developments this season when we've chatted about like a Lankin or something like that. But Connor Garland emerges as a real top six forward. It's not just the production you think, a nice little streak here. Like, there is elements to here. The underlying numbers have supported that, you know, this is the best he's played. And it's just 11 games, but it's really strong from Connor Garland right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And terrific. Connor Garland was absolutely terrific tonight. We've had some people texting in about Atu Ratu and how we thought he played tonight. And we're going to play his quick interview with Olivia McDonald coming up just in a minute or so here before we get to IMAC. But just to sum up his night, I know we briefly touched on him earlier, but I thought overall he did what he was asked to do. You know,
it got better. Because it started with the penalty.
And then Anaheim scores on the penalty. He steps off the ice, steps onto the ice, and kind of collides with McGinn and trips him up. It's I don't know. It's kind of accidental, kind of, you know, maybe a panic moment or whatever it is. I don't know what happens.
It's
not great.
It's definitely a penalty.
It's a penalty. It is. I just don't know how, you know, it's one of those things, right? And you can see the look on his face, like, my first shift on the recall and I'm taking a penalty, and then Anaheim scores. Like, it's tough, right? But he's not a player that lets that bother him. He had the five hits. I know that was brought up. But most impressively, he won 7 out of 9 faceoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 78%. And I think that's something he brings down the lineup, especially with how he flips his grip and takes right-handed face-offs, and he wins a lot of them. Like, that's a real nice asset to have and something this team needs.
Canucks wind up winning 54% of the draws tonight, so he plays a role in 7 of the 34 draws that they did win tonight. And it's, look, have a role. Build it up, obviously, and 10 minutes, do what you can, right? You're coming back in after a stint away from the team. Just do what you can tonight and play a role. 5 hits, 78% in the draw. Nothing to complain about. Something to build upon here. I didn't expect him to come here. You know, I know he's been playing so well in the AHL. Didn't expect him to come here, play 14, 15 minutes a night and say, all right, like, I got my point and I'm helping out in a way. Just a solid performance to start building your resume back here in the NHL.
Yeah, absolutely. Great stuff there from Atu Ratu tonight, helping the Canucks in the faceoff circle in a big way. And here he is postgame chatting with Olivia McDonald, a Canucks reporter, about his performance tonight and the win against the Ducks.
Take us through the team effort in this one, what you saw from the group as a whole.
Yeah, I thought we played a good solid 60. Obviously, they got the first goal there on the power play, but you know, that didn't stop us and got two quickly and then had the lead. And I thought, you know, we defended that lead well and kind of kept scoring at a steady pace. So I think it's a great game for us.
We talked earlier, you're coming off a couple good games there with Abbotsford. How'd you feel stepping into today's game?
Felt great, felt confident, and I kind of playing with some good line mates and kind of knowing my role. So it was it was easy to go in, and you know, when the team's playing this well, it's easy to fit in there.
Can you speak to the performance of Kevin Lankinen and what it's like to play in front of him?
Yeah, Kevin is playing some great hockey. Obviously, I didn't see some of the games that he won here, but yeah, he's playing unbelievable. I mean, he's so calm out there and you know, plays great with the puck, and obviously, you know, he's stopping everything. So that gives us a lot of confidence. But obviously, we're trying to defend well and box out for him to keep him, you know, keep his confidence up and whatnot.
Can you say what the key was to defeating this Ducks team? It looked like maybe it took you 5 or 6 minutes to figure it out.
Yeah, I thought we just kind of stick to the plan and just kept rolling 4 lines. And, you know, the power play was good, scored. And, you know, yeah, I just think we were really consistent and kind of never got our foot off the gas. We just kept playing.
And that is Atu Ratu after being recalled and playing tonight for the Canucks in a 5-1 win over the Anaheim Ducks. And he did not feature on the PK tonight, but he mentioned the all-around game, which was solid. And the other part of their game this evening was the penalty kill. Now, I know they allowed a goal, but they killed the other ones off. And we got this text message here. on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650 from Kia, the ski doctor. Aren't the Canucks PK number one in the NHL based on underlying numbers right now? PK has been one of the more consistent, steady things the Canucks have done well so far this year. And they have been very good on the PK, legitimately good. Even the goal they scored, we talked about, like, you can't even call that necessarily a breakdown. It's just, you know, how that play kind of unfolded. And teams are going to score against you when you are shorthanded from time to time. The underlying numbers, it depends what metrics you're looking at, and it depends on, you know, what sites you go to. But it's fair to say, through most of the important metrics, the Canucks rank amongst the best in the league. And that's a very positive sign. And maybe the best thing they've done so far this year, Bic, and this is something that the coach spoke about a lot last year, is getting those clears. They get clears a lot more this year. And when you don't spend a lot as much time defending, you do a good job. And I thought the Canucks last year, even early on, they were defending well in zone. They just spent a lot of time in their own zone. Didn't get enough clears. And they bemoaned the fact the first half of the year. But they've been really effective getting the puck out of their own end on the PK.
Yeah, pending, again, the sites that you use. But, you know, Natural Stat Trick so far this year looks at the Canucks as kind of a top 10 unit as far as expected goals against and expected, and high danger chances against. So it's good markers. And, yeah, you know, we've chatted, even though there's, you know, guys that people have had concerns about, like Forbert and Desharnais, very stout on the penalty kill. Mm-hmm. Like their numbers historically have been always strong. So they feature prominently and thrive in the PK role.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, it's time to go to Anaheim where the man we call the triple threat watched the game. You can see him talk on TV about it. You read him on digital. You're about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
Feed Jake DeBrusk.
Yes. Back-to-back games, Jake DeBrusk scores. And, you know, on TV, he looked like a more engaged player on the goal. You know, Bick really broke it down nicely. He showed his physicality, getting to the net, did a great job boxing out. He shows his hands. It's amazing what the confidence after scoring your first goal will do to your game, isn't it?
Yeah, you know what else I saw on that goal? How much he seemed to enjoy it. You know, for a goal halfway through the third period in what turned out to be a fairly comfortable win, that was a lot of happiness from a guy. And I think that's a key part of you know, the benefit of scoring against San Jose is it just seemed to allow him to be freer tonight. And he was very honest talking to me about it after, about, you know, you can tell yourself about process and all these other things, but you so badly want to score your first goal for a new team, whether it's a trade or a signing. And when it doesn't happen and the games just start to multiply where it hasn't happened, you can't help but think about it. And he looked tonight like a guy who was just playing hockey instead of worrying about his goal. And part of the reason I bring him up, because tonight was kind of a convergence as well with a bunch of the new guys. You know, we've been talking about Kiefer Sherwood since the start of the season, and he's been the best of their new players, but he was fantastic again tonight. And that line now with another of the new guys, Danton Heinen, and I thought this might have been Heinen's best game. You know, that line with Teddy Bluger is starting to look as effective as the third line was last year with Teddy Bluger when it was Connor Garland and Dakota Joshua. I mean, you're noticing that line every night. And you know, then you had Brännström, who made a nice feed to tee up Sherwood's goal. I thought Desharnais tonight was solid as a third pairing guy. Kind of, who knows what the lineup would have looked like if it was Derek Forbard, but it's not. And then you have Lankanen in goal, and Lankanen, like Sherwood, I mean, he's been fantastic all along. So that's not new, but it's encouraging that, and even Daniel Sprong tonight, I thought he had a couple of good moments. And what I do like about him is how willing he is to shoot the puck when he gets opportunities. So, you know, maybe this transition is coming along. We spent basically all of October, whenever you were talking about the Canucks, you had to also talk about the transition and the new players and, you know, why weren't things working for some guys like they were for others. It seems like on this road trip, and granted, the Canucks have taken advantage of opponents who are inferior. But especially the game in San Jose, that was far from just a walkover. You know, the Sharks played well. The Sharks played probably about as well as they could. I don't know if the Ducks played as well as they could tonight, but I think the Canucks had a lot to do with it. But it feels like maybe this transition is moving along, and maybe we're going to start to see more from some of these new guys, and especially Jake DeBrusk on that line with Miller and Besser.
But even with the inferior competition, you know, Rick Tocchet always mentions that, you know, the ratio that they focus on themselves versus the competition is something like 80-20 during the regular season. And so if you just focus on the Canucks tonight, it probably felt like their tightest performance, especially defensively.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing Anaheim has is some individual talent, right? They do have some good young players. You know, what their confidence level is right now, I mean, it's hard to say, but they are a team that you look at their lineup and you think, okay, well, they can, if you make some mistakes, they can jump on you. They may not be able to beat you. They may not be able to play a system and a sound all around game, but they have guys who can give you trouble. And I thought the Canucks tonight kept themselves out of trouble, other than for whatever reason, the Vancouver just wasn't sharp in the first, you know, 6 or 8 minutes. And of course they fell behind on the early power play goal for the Ducks. But after that, I mean, Vancouver basically just, you know, manhandled them on a talent and systems level. Like the Canucks were just at a level as a team that the Ducks weren't going to be able to match. And I think a lot of that was how sound Vancouver was with the puck, how good they were generally at getting out of their own zone, and how diligent they were in the offensive zone while they were creating all these chances. They weren't just selling out for points night. They weren't getting caught on the outnumbered rushes. I mean, they gave up more chances in the first period to Anaheim, I think, in outnumbered rushes than they did in this game against the Ducks. So that's a very positive thing as well for Vancouver. But we all know a bigger test is going to come Thursday. But you can't play a Stanley Cup team if you're scheduled to play the San Jose Sharks or the Anaheim Ducks. It doesn't work that way. You play the teams who are in front of you. And the Canucks certainly took care of business in these first two games in California. Thursday is going to be a sterner test, mm-hmm. we would think, against the LA Kings. But, you know, the Canucks are, dare I say, they're making progress. You know, they're looking like they're maybe going to be able to build a little more consistency into their game. And if they can play as soundly defensively as they did against the Ducks, when they play better teams, mm-hmm. you know, there's no question about the talent level Vancouver has. And especially, you know, I've mentioned DeBrusk and Heinen and Sherwood and Sprong. There's no doubt that this is a team that's going to be able to score goals as long as they take care of the puck, take care of what's it Tocchet says, the guts of the ice, and just be smart and diligent about not surrendering the easy chances for the opposition, Vancouver can win an awful lot of hockey games.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And, you know, you're right. We'll see against the LA Kings if the steps they've taken the last couple of games have them back to that identity, very close to it here tonight against the Anaheim Ducks. And, you know, as far as Brock Besser is concerned, IMAC has a 6th goal of the season, leads the team in goal scoring. 6 goals in 11 games puts him on a better pace than the one he had last year when he scored 40 goals. Is this what he is now? Like, is he legitimately a 35-40 guy that we can count on?
Yeah, you know, when I watch Brock, and I'm not trying to pretend like I'm a coach, because God knows I couldn't run a practice, even after watching a gazillion of them all these years. When I watch Brock, it's just how well he plays all over the ice now. Like, it used to be, and I would say even last year, when he started, you know, so prolifically and had that great first half, when he started, you know, counting the goals, and he was, you know, roaring through his previous ceiling. It was so much about the goals, and to be honest, you know, that's how he's going to be paid, and you know, for the rest of his career, that's going to be a key measuring stick, because the goal scorer's got to score, right? But when you see him in person and you see how hard he works all over the ice and how much he has transformed his game under Rick Tocchet, how he's trusted in defensive situations, how about how many times now he comes up with a puck?
Yeah.
Like a guy who, and I hate to, you know, I'm not trying to be mean to Brock. I love the guy and I have a good relationship with him. But, you know, in previous years, he was never first to a puck, you know, and he never won a puck if he wasn't first. So now he gets to the pucks quicker, and he's so good at using his body. I think this is something he's learned from JT. He's so good at using his body now to shield, protect, deflect, and he comes up with pucks. And he's just such a good player for the team all around. And, you know, I don't know what is going to make a lot of money the way he's going. I don't know what that contract will look like, but he's going to be a very good player, because it's no longer just about scoring the goals. They almost seem to be now a byproduct of just how well he plays mm-hmm. all over the ice. And the kind of chances that his line generates by him contributing all over the ice. It's kind of, when he started scoring last year, it just seemed to be, well, and especially in previous years, well, if he gets these goals, well, then maybe he'll play, you know, it's a sign that he's playing better, or will get the rest of his game going. Now I think the rest of the game is so good that the goals are just going to continue to come.
Yeah, that's certainly what it feels like and what it looks like. A terrific start to the season for Brock Besser. And IMAC, that brings us to the end of the show. And we always appreciate your insights. And you know, we'll let you get home, get to your hotel room, and hopefully get a decent sleep, because the game coming up on Thursday, it's a 7:30 start. So if we get you, we're not getting you to about 11:40-ish Pacific time.
Are you extending the radio show for me on Thursday night?
We're going to midnight, yeah. So if you can join us,
all right,
then we'll have you on.
Then I'll be there.
I love it.
Yes, I will not deprive you of my company.
Yes, that makes
no
us
matter
happy.
How much, no matter how much you may wish for plot twists and availability issues, so that I get delayed. But no, I can make that the 11:30 to midnight is easier for me to make than 11 to 11:30, because technically, with my writing job, kind of this other little thing I do.
Right.
Technically, I can go to 11:30 if I need to, but I really try. I do my best.
There's
a few minutes late tonight. I do my best to get it done by 11:10 or so that I can share some time with you. But man, pressure's off. I feel like Jake DeBrusk with that extra half hour of radio now on Thursday night. I can just enjoy things.
We had daylight savings time on the weekend. We have Ian saving time on yes. Thursdays is what's happening.
All right. Well, I will look forward to that, fellas.
Yeah, great stuff as always, Ian. And I look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca as well. I get to your hotel safely tonight.
I will. Thanks, guys.
That is Ian McIntyre. Great stuff as always. And yeah, that is the end of the show. We appreciate every single one of you for listening, participating, being part of the show. Always a pleasure. And fun one tonight, a Canucks 5-1 victory over the Anaheim Ducks. We'll be back on the airwaves tomorrow. Halford and Bruff get things going at 6 a.m. And Bick, the People Show, what's up?
Trey Wingo will join us at 3:10, continue setting up week 10 NFL trade deadline. Wednesdays, we fill in the blank. We have lots of fun.
Yeah, overrated, underrated, plus Kevin Woodley is joining us on Canuck Central tomorrow. Special thanks to Fast Eddie Gregory. He is Bick Nazar. I'm Satyar Shah. You've been listening to the Canuck Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.